poets and procrastinators, readers and seekers, in trousers or tiaras, non-conformers and non-believers, gender X and gender equals. Welcome back to the second half of season 6 of Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast, coming to you pre-recorded on Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts, iTunes. Basically, whatever is your preferred platform, you can find us there, and thank you so much for sticking with us. This is episode 10, season 6, which means that we've already had 88 episodes and over 420 international guest readers. My name is Damien B. Donnelly, and I started this podcast back in July 2020, a month before my debut poetry pamphlet, Eat the Storms, was published by the Hedgehog Poetry Press, and I was having sleepless night number 25, thinking that my dream had come true. I had a book of poems coming out with my name on it, but due to COVID, nobody was going to know anything about it. Dreams and nightmares, always far too close to each other, unlike our social distancing of the time. So, in the midst of a 3 a.m. brain wreck, I decided to start a podcast. The first episode was me just reading my own poems, a short story, and blabbering on. I pressed publish and it went out into the stratosphere, and it was only then that I thought, holy shit, what comes next? Even my own ears couldn't stand listening to me reading my own poetry for a full hour every week. So Gaynor Kane, Belfast poet and dear friend and giver of light and laughter, became my first guest on the second episode. And from there it spread to, like I said, now with over 220 guests. And of course, now we're also a journal with issue 2 coming out very soon, but more about that later on in the programme. Today, we have 4 guest poets, 2 returning stormers and 2 new guests to join the podcast. So I guess that means it's time to kickstart the show. I suggest you settle back into your favourite armchair, pull up the blanket around you on the sofa, or just look out the window of the train and let our guests today transport you. And hey, if you have a slice of cake, it's time to eat. I'm Damien B. Donnelly, this is Eat the Storms, and I truly hope you enjoy the show. And today, for our first port of call, we are heading to Austin, Texas in the United States for an author whose digital chapbook, Don't Fall in Love with Sisyphus, was published last year by the bloody brilliant Famidan Publishing. Today, spoiling us with not just poems from that digital chapbook, but also from her upcoming Womb Worlds chapbook, coming very soon from Finishing Line Press. You may recognise her from places like Beyond Words magazine, The Ephrastic Review, Boats Against the Current Poetry magazine, or perhaps from the poem Who You See, which was nominated for Best of the Net in 2022 as featured in the Famidan Journal. Today, bringing us life in all its shades and connections, and also scenes of how it dances, I'm delighted to welcome for the first time to Eat the Storms, Lisa Molina.
Hi, everybody. I'm thrilled to be reading for you today. I'm going to start with a title poem from my digital collection, Don't Fall in Love with Sisyphus, published by Famidan Publishing and Company. When I was going through one of my many times of questioning the tragedies and sorrows and struggles of life, I read The Myth of Sisyphus by Albert Camus. And it really helped me to see that our suffering can and does have meaning. Don't fall in love with Sisyphus. He sweats, muscles taut, pushing, shoving, worrying, heaving, grunting, yearning, suffering, crying out, mercy! The heavy, hard, imperfect, rough rock, up, 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 finally, agonizingly, triumphantly, he reaches the scorching summit, only to witness it rolling down, down, down the hill of life, laughing at him, knowing it is a relentless, meaningless struggle. But if you do fall in love with Sisyphus, there exist momentary flashes of insight that your mere existence has changed others' lives for the better. Smiles, connections, intimacies, mending, melding of souls, crying out, "My love." There is no meaning in life, only the experience of living. Pushing, shoving, worrying, heaving, grunting, yearning, suffering, crying out, "Mercy." Incessantly struggling to reach the heights and begin again and again and again. And when that overthinking brain boulder of yours reaches the summit of your suffering, you'll throw back your head laughing loudly in joyful reverence and awe as it rolls down the mountain to the depths always, waiting for you as only a lover can and will. Maybe you should fall in love with Sisyphus. He demands a larger rock. The next poem I'll be reading is from my new collection, Womb Worlds, published by Finishing Line Press. It's called Emerging. How to reach the center. Holding together this universe that by some law of physics it's pulling itself apart with no center of gravity. What do the swirling, seemingly out of control events of life, the kaleidoscope of people, memories, fear of future, and numbness require in order to be planted, nurtured, grounded? There is a liminal space, a gift of ribbon wrapped presence that I so carefully open. The gift is time, trials, and testimonials of teachers, gurus. Only then will I experience the alchemy, transforming the womb's darkness to golden light. The next poems I'll be reading can be found in both the collections I previously mentioned. These poems are about the time in my family's life when my young son battled leukemia 3 times by the time he was 13 years old. The first is called Prognosis Percentage. The boy, age 13, battling leukemia 3 times since he was 3, asks the transplant doctor, "What are my chances of surviving, Dr. Lee?" Dr. Lee locks eyes with boy intentionally and says, 40%, somewhat confidently. Furiously, insistently, boy pounds fist on the table. "I'll take nothing less than 50, negotiating for his life, desperately. A roar of silence, air is hot. The agonizing 3-second wait. Dr. Lee's eyes crinkle as he laughs, offering out his hand, the boy's to grasp. "You've got it," he says. The deal is done, the bidding won, all parties agree heartily. And that boy fighter of unrelenting hope is given 10% more so that he may cope. Prognosis percentage? It's just a number to hear, for no quantification can suffice the value of my womb child's life. The next poem is about the days just following my son's double unrelated umbilical cord transplant that he had when he was 13 years old. Waiting for life. I am still waiting in the pediatric cancer transplant unit. 10 days and nights so far. Will his body embrace the donated cord blood cells as my womb once embraced him as an unborn child? Or reject them, refuse them, causing his death? The children on the other sides of 2 walls of our room have whispered their final breaths. My child is still breathing, living a life between deaths. What is he dreaming? Has he descended to the depths, lying in a dark womb cave, Lazarus awaiting? And I'll end with a joyful piece from those same collections. It's called Life Still Dances, and it's dedicated to my husband, Gary. We're in the pediatric cancer unit. Liquid chemo dripping through the snake-like tube pressed into your chest, leading to your heart, destroying all the cancer cells in your puffed, swollen body. But it's Mardi Gras. Your dad comes into the hospital room carrying a loaded box full of hope, of normalcy. We put on the beads, we play the Zydeco music, we devour the purple, green, gold king cake with the baby inside, its womb of wheat, sugar, and eggs. We help you out of the bed, IV pole still attached to the tube in your chest as a cord once attached you to my womb. Your little sister reaches for your hands, the music louder, the sounds of accordions singing, rhythms thumping. You move together, swaying, smiling, dancing, laughing. I'm dancing in reverie with your father. The nurses come in, clapping, laughing. It is a dance of the exquisite, normal, nearly lost in our lives that cancer cannot take away from us. Hope always moves and grooves to the dance of life. So dance, life, dance. Thank you so much, Damien. I really appreciate it.
From Austin, Texas in the United States, we are heading a little closer to home, at least my home here in Dublin, Ireland, and landing in Bethnal Green in London in the United Kingdom, where we are going to join a poet who was actually born in Melbourne, Australia. He has lived in 5 different countries, including Singapore and Mexico, and it appears that Mexico was certainly a place to inspire poetry, as that was where he wrote his first collection called Show Me the Way into Exile, recently published by Alien Buddha Press. He's appeared in over 30 international publications, including A Thin Slice of Anxiety, The Madrigal Press, and The Jupiter Review, to name but a few. Another newcomer to the podcast, I am always delighted to share new voices and visions and hidden loves with you all. So please go wild in your own way, in your own home, for Damien Postorino.
Hello, this is Damien Postorino, and it's an honour to be a guest on Eat the Storms. I was born in Melbourne, but moved to the UK many years ago, and home is now Bethnal Green in London. Thanks very much to Damien for inviting me on the podcast, which I always enjoy on my Sunday walk around Victoria Park. I'm going to read some poems from my first collection of 40 poems called Show Me the Way into Exile, which was just published by Alien Buddha Press on January the 26th. The poems explore how being in exile can manifest itself in many ways. The first poem is called And For Our Next Act. They say I need to laugh more, but what if it's the wrong type? I sit here listening to people. My ears are prick balloons, deflated by their vanilla anecdotes, amusing nobody but themselves. I get the giggles at funerals. How I hope I have the last laugh too, not forced to get the joke anymore. Somebody laughed hard at something they didn't hear. It reminded me of so many filtered sunsets. Smear your lens with lots more Vaseline. I tried to laugh again recently. It sounded a bit maniacal. In the mirror, there was an audience waiting for the punchline. My next poem is about hidden love. It's called Don't Wake Me in the Morning. Shame is a spotlight in our eyes. The audience applauds others while we hide in the shadows. Grab a shovel to bury sorrow under snow. Like orchids in the cold, we will wither. Our temptation pulses like heavy footsteps. Hear our hearts beat. Rhythm gets stronger, then frightens into stone. Slide our bodies under sheets of passion, skin under silk and sweat. Desires stain them. We whitewash the memories. Our bones are brittle from these burdens on our back. Dim the lights on this temporary coalition. Follow bright apparitions made for strangers searching in the dark. The next poem is called Answer on a Postcard, and it's about following your own star. You can't crave a song that belongs to another. Steal a line from a poet, leave a lie beside the bed. Tide sings stories of men who stay stuck on the shore, building castles for empires that collapse in their hands. They dig moats around their minds, live in bunkers, to hide from regrets that wash over. The truth shoots from the ripples like a bullet through your brain. Let wild currents grip your fears and drag you away. The taste of brine is sweeter than a kiss from shallow's lips. Let oceans take you out to drown naked in bliss. My next poem shares the title of my collection, Show Me the Way into Exile. Surrender by your teens, stand still on tiptoes. I don't want to be in their tribe. Hands shake when I try to tie a perfect Oxford noose. Picket fences speak in tongues. Suburban schemes eat my brain. Remember when they laughed at me? Nostalgia is an open grave. Scribbled screams on toilet walls, masquerading as philosophy. The old lightkeeper stays still, prays for the lost. Each ebb of the tide, another riddle to be solved. The sea's wind whistles a homecoming song for men in exile. Shipwrecks are everywhere. And my last poem today is called People Used to Applaud When a Plane Landed, and it's about all the pains we carry. A can of dreams breaks fairy floss clouds, a drag queen landing on stage. Feet and tears swell, children yell at mothers who haven't had a wink in years. Shotgun weddings, reconciliations and unhappy endings hang suspended while we wait for trolley dollies, company cloned and cheekboned, to serve up second best. Business class couples hold each other hand to glove under blankets of whatever it is those people have. The rest of us retreat into window seats to manage our turbulence and search for runways which never seem to arrive. Thanks again to Damien and Eat the Storms for having me on this excellent podcast. I hope you enjoyed hearing from my first collection, Show Me the Way into Exile. You can follow and connect with me on Twitter at Damien Postorino. Thanks, everyone.
We are staying in the United Kingdom for the time being while we welcome back a much loved guest to the podcast. She might not have dropped by every season, but whenever she comes by, I am enchanted, and no more so than today, where she has chosen poems all interconnected by dreams, some of which have appeared in Ink, Sweat and Tears, Dear Reader, Yaffle and Apex. In 2020, when she first joined us, she shared poems from her debut collection, Magnifying Glass, published by Black Eyes Publishing, and I am honoured that she was one of our contributors in the inaugural issue of The Storms. Today, as always, she will be listening in South Wales with something sweet, usually prepared by her wife, Kath, and I think today it might be brownies. This is the poet who loves the coast and the scent of ice cream freezers. This is Sue Finch.
Thank you, Damien. It's a pleasure to be back on Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. Thank you for having me. I have chosen five poems today, and they're interconnected in that some aspect of each one of these came from a dream. There are other things that come into play as well, and sometimes I've learned something about the way my mind works from writing these. Anyway, the first one of these is called Invitation. This is my lockdown dream poem. Invitation. She says I will be able to see Perseids tonight in her armpits, just as I am worrying that I cannot read binary. I assure myself I can Google it later, hoping that the instructions will be simple. I plan to have a notebook and pen ready. I know that joke about there being 10 kinds of people in the world, those who understand binary and those who don't. I tell her it would be great to see the meteors up close, nuzzled right in. They don't make your neck ache this way, she says. And you will be able to hear the crackles of ancient fires. It is all deep in there. I wonder if we will ever be sociable again after this. How many people in the world are hankering to see night skies in the armpits of lovers? The next poem is Blade. I fashioned a blade from ice, carved its purity with steel, ran with it to the circus tent, raised it above my head so it flashed under the lights. The slow drip down my wrists reminded me the treasure of it was temporary, but I made this, and the moment was mine. Too early for the ringmaster and clown to be breathing grassed air in full costume. Braces dangling, cheeks pink, faces not yet settled, they watched. Are you auditioning? Asked the ringmaster, breaking the enclosed silence. I felt sure I could pull something off, but wondered how I would cope in the cold caravans. Was it time to see so much more of the world, or had I carved this beautiful dagger for a different purpose? I frowned thoughtfulness. Then, feet together, I lifted my warming weapon above my head. Neck back, I opened my mouth as wide as I could. Tasted yesterday's popcorn tinged with hot dog. Slid it slowly in. I am 98% sure they applauded. And the next poem had me searching for a plastic apple so that I could spray it blue and give it to my mum. This poem's called An Apple for My Mum. I need to tell you exactly what colour it was. Did you ever suck an American boiled sweet? A blue one. Slip it out of your mouth, hold it to the sun to admire it before sliding its smoothness back in and licking the wet sugar coating from the pads of your thumb and index finger. It was nearly that blue. And did you have that gel toothpaste, so bright you squeezed it the full length of your brush's bristles, even though you knew the tube said pea-sized? The kind that had you wondering how blue made teeth white? It was almost that kind of blue, and it shone, like the first strokes from a bottle of nail polish labelled electric blue. And there it was, hanging from the branch of a tree within reach, four firm knuckles at its base, and no one had picked it. So I got it for her, that bluest of apples. And all the way to her house, excitement held my stomach captive as I imagined her biting into it or wanting to put it on display for the whole world to see. This poem's called Rescuing the Giraffe, and I think it might be a poem about being a poet. Let's see. Rescuing the Giraffe. Counting the tangled legs, I make it six. One head, so I count again. This time I make it an almost knotted four, and its eyes are fixed on mine as if I could be its mother. But how do you retrieve a giraffe from an earthquake crack? And then what do you do with it? The trees are bare, and I feel unqualified for this emergency act. I am almost sure its skin would feel like suede, and those hot chocolate eyes are imploring me. You are a poet. You owe me this, it says. So I sit on the edge, reach down my hands, pat its gentle rump. It is all muscle under that thin, soft skin. I stroke tentatively. Don't bite me, I say. And the giraffe is offended. Okay, what I mean is, it might be uncomfortable while I sort out your legs. It barely makes a sound as I work. Released feet scrabble to find their place on the jagged sides of the hole. It is ready for the hauling. My arms cradle its stomach, leaving the legs to dangle, and I have him rising. He is as unsteady as the day he was born, skidding like a skater on their first rink. But finally, he is up, shaking off confusion, and I am seeing the size of our shadows. For my final poem, this one has possibly one of my longest titles. It's called Last Night I Dreamt I Slid My Poems Into Drawers of Disinfectant to Sterilise Their Titles. Today, a poet in black stands at a lectern, reading us her words. At the end, she straightens her pages, says she wants to sing for us. Feet together, shoulders back, she begins. Her eyes are closed as she sends out the song. I want to listen, but she is moving now. Her, the lectern, and the music she is making are rising into the air. I see no ropes, no pulleys, yet she is up, beyond the curtain fringe. Then a slice of the stage drops open beneath her, and I gasp as I see what is planned. Down into the trap room she goes. I wasn't sure her song fitted, or exactly what she was trying to tell us, but her poems had me clapping. I turn to you, realising that I don't own her books or remember her name. No one in the audience seems the least perturbed. They're going for ice cream. Come on, you say. They've got three different vegan flavours. Thank you for having me, Damien.
For our last journey today, we're staying in the United Kingdom to welcome back another returning stormer. And this time it's blooming exciting because this guest is here to share with us work from his new collection, Cul de Sac, or Cul de Sacrilege, published last year by Polari Press. And it's his first collection all by himself. In the past, stemming from his musical background as part of the Andy Bell is Torsten and the Downs Braid Association, he's released Fuck Pig Zeitgeist and Bucolicism, which he read on his last visit to Storms. Documenting the queer everyman in rural England, Cul de Sacrilege has had dreamlike reviews, including this one. Vigorous, vivacious, searing and scorching wordplay. As queer poetry, it feels personal, personable, groundbreaking and truly seismic. And that was from the one and only Andy Bell of Erasure. Always bringing to each and every reading such power and presence, it's an honour to welcome back to Eat the Storms, Barney Ashton Bullock.
Hi Damien, it's such a thrill for me to be back on the Eat the Storms Poetry podcast, which I enjoy immensely. And happy for me to come back on the occasion of, well, my first solo poetry collection, Cul de Sacrilege, has just been published by Polari Press. And it means a lot to me, not because I haven't had poetry collections published before. I have, but they've always been tied in to the music bands that I'm associated with, whether that's the Downs Braid Association and the pamphlet Bucolicism, or the two books that I've done as spin-offs from the Andy Bellis Torsten project, which were Schema Stasis, the Torsten Verse Diaries, and F-Pig Zeitgeist. So this is the first time that it's really been me and my voice. And Cul de Sacrilege is, to all intents and purposes, pretty much a narrative verse book. It tells the story of the trajectory of a life of a queer everyman from growing up amidst the cataclysmic loneliness of the rural southwest of England, kind of unsatisfactory school days, leaving for the promissory promiscuities of the city when one comes of age. Uninspiring menial first jobs, uninspiring menial relationships. And then just as our protagonist gets into the swing of things, he's hit by what I describe as an Armageddon or an enfrazzlement. And this, I've let it hang as to whether that is a personal breakdown or the wider society in breakdown. And of course, we all had a taste of that during the recent lockdown. So I'll start with a poem called Village. These dew-dashed ballad downs at dusk, their flannelette-filtered translucency, their ethereally gust-thwacked sparsity, their muted refractions of wheat sheaves asway, grainy as you like in the drawn light. We, mere pinpoints aprance, freestyling in the flashlights midst their giddy levity, our scruff of signature left in the stomped crop's trample. We vortices of loneliness eschew the coital co-substantiates of a GPS iPhone app, engineering free love betwixt such brittle strangers who melt for lust and pour for sex. The top road through which we as air shuffling exeunt to the 907 market day bus, the rusting hoops of stanchions of the withered wreck of shelter in which first-time memories were made. Sigs, ket, stout, side, hash, snog, blow, laid, vom, chuck. On that trusty bus immemorial, now only air on a Thursday, sometimes, silently, without word or intimation, through the wanding wonk of cattle pong that sands the breeze, a youngster won't return, and an aged farmer's wife in well-versed mock concern will glintily glisser, tamps a goss,
Directly all spudlins hath ped off through the dimsey of a Eurotide eve. They'll match and hatch as twere ere thus con to dis eye. Dis never a goodbye. As in absentia, all flaxen fledglings were wont to do. As in perpetu, all sylvan nestlings ere avon must. Afore the byres been trumped the mere dander dust.
So from the village that one grew up in, our protagonist, to memories of the kind of illicit drugs that go on, really for entertainment and kicks, in the local pubs and inns of rural Dorset. This is called Spike Mine.
Tavernier shunt in a sordid shanty shimmy. Mayhap the miscreant shag out back. The pig bins are strewn as bedding for the reckoning. Anointed studs spurl their dew through styli pricks to the maidenheads who choose their groove and BPM. We witness e wallflower shufflers gawp asinine with arfs of this or that tincture, thinking of the tinking dealer and winking him, Spike Mine. Soon them soused smirgy forms with their spoogy spectral minds are so rinsed in lolly lurid colours they become rainbow blind and are leached to grief's grey, latched bereft of life. What a lottery of twists that tryst of snorters dealer dip and dive within, scrunched to levity afore the morrow's scree of next of kins. Rest in peace, whichever pixel burst you were, whichever such somnambulant bluey hues elided to a non-zephyr. You, now, wherever the barcodes weep, where the microchip can wane, wax and warp undetected, where the flowers of sulphur grow glowing gold with their plucker's pulse beat, where thine and mine entwine in approximations of eternity. Now, communality is but your putrefactions all melding in the earth, and you sing, like harp strings buzzing in a late summer breeze, your chorus of relief, nay, release. Spike mine! Spike mine! Spike mine!
And of course, it is a matter of fact that when you go down west, you'll find that the nighttime minibuses that the teenagers and might be travelling on at night, and certainly the public toilets where they might go to keep warm, given that they can't get into pubs, are all lit with ultraviolet light, so that should they have a concoction of choice that they wish to dig deep, they won't be able to find their veins. I'll leave you with the poem Woodwork, which has proven to be the favourite poem of many of the audiences that I've been lucky enough to read to from Cul de Sacrilege. It's really the eulogy of a remembrance of a first job that our protagonist had as an apprentice carpenter when he came to London, and details that he very much fell in love with his master carpenter. This is called Woodwork.
Our bevels sanded silky, knotted kinkeries inclined into concave curves, all such glitches expunged or veneered. The vice-like grip of tension held us deadlocked in a dovetail joint, in splintering suspension, in a web of complex chiselling nerves, bouncing and rebounding within our abject clamped stasis, and every affirmation mouthed, pounced on as clickbait, reading the varnished intent within as ever, too late, too late. But, oh, the smooth artisan beauty of a man and his mate, in symmetrical sympathy, in mortis and tenon fixity, of mutual conjoinery. We nudged in jilty niggles past the chocking blunt blades of cack-handed hams and held fast as our lives planed against the grain, our kisses in the sawdust.
That's all for now from me. Those poems were From Cul de Sacrilege by Barney Ashton Bullock from Polari Press. Thank you ever so much, Damien, for having me. All power to you and to Eat the Storms podcast, which we all thoroughly enjoy. Thank you very much for doing it.
And that was it for my guests on the show today, and what wonderful guests they were to kickstart the second half of season 6. That's the amazing thing about getting to put together a podcast like this each week, is that I get to sit and listen to each of these poets captivate me, mesmerise me and inspire me. When I moved back to Ireland in December 2019, it was just before COVID struck, and I knew that in doing so I was going to give up working in the fashion industry, which I had worked in for the previous 24 years in Paris, London and Amsterdam. So coming back to Ireland, I was hoping that in some way I might find my way into some form of a literary community and try and figure out if this poetry thing that I dabbled in the background, if it could be a little more centre stage in my life. So when I started the podcast, everything was a bit of a dream. There was a hope that maybe someone would listen in and that maybe someone one day would want to sit and read and share an episode with me. Honestly, 420 poets later, 420 bloody brilliant international poets later, it still knocks me out every time I get an email from somebody saying, hey, I've been tuning in and I like it and I'd like to be a guest. Thank you so much, everybody. And so before I leave you today, I'm going to share with you one of my poems, and today I'm going to read a poem from Enough, my first full collection, which was published by the Hedgehog Poetry Press last August. This collection is about my love affair with Paris, which started when I first moved there when I was 22 back in 1997. I left when I was 24 to move to London, then on to Amsterdam, but then I moved back when I was 40 and stayed there until I was 45, and then, as I said, I moved back to Ireland. It wasn't always as perfect as the postcards try to depict. As with everything, it has many shades, lots of shadows. And if you've been to Paris and seen a little bit beyond the gits, the glitz and the glamour, you will know that it is a concrete jungle, and very often it cuts. And in summer, especially in August, it's a seemingly sexy, slinky city. And yet its concrete sucks in all that midday sun and then releases it late at night as a stale secondary sweat. Now, the collection is broken down into 6 sections: the leaning in, the living, the loving, the moving, the leaning out, and the leaving. And so this poem that I'm going to share for you now is all about the moving. It takes place on a metro, moments on metros still moving. Moments on the metro still moving, still cruising, still choosing, still cozy with communicators not communicating. Commuter looks like communication, but no commuter communicates. Moments on the metro still moving, still breaking, still stopping at stations where beggars enter with la chanson, trying to get the chance on, prancing into pockets of passengers losing patience with moments on the metro still moving. Still making manoeuvres along carriages of commuters, consumed with new tunes on iPhones and handheld computers and foldaway scooters, as cute girl eyes gay guy in grey shirt and another guy notices a mini of her skirt and he dreams of dessert, dreams of slithering so slow along her carriage to drive his tiny train into her station like he was Spartacus the Thracian riding illusion's vibration. While there were moments on the metro, still moving, still chancing, still stealing odd glances, while penning poems and nodding into naps with bags loaded onto laps of madams with makeup making faces as if painting Picassos, checking mirrors to see if the eyes line up, lines of metro still moving, still staring through the tunnels of non-communicative communicators, cool and classy and crazy and quirky and the man smelling of starvation and stale streets and blackened feet, while the buskers belt out bad notes and get worse looks instead of crisp notes, and the red hat and the short skirt and the tall ones, the tired ones, the tourists plotting their positions on plans too small to be able to even pinpoint a pub. Metros making their way through moments between the darkness, on tracks all laid and loyal, not like our thoughts, spinning and fretting about fitting, fitting in, fitting on, fitting into tracks, trains, skirts, holes, cyber lives to make us whole in private compartments to crush us closer into strangers, coming closer to scents and smells and stenches that choke us in breaths, breathing onto the backs of tensed up necks of unnamed neighbors, slithering like snakes from tracks, taking us back and forth to and fro, to work, to home, to him, to her, to zero, to the passing parties and improbable possibilities. There are moments on these metros, still moving through this underground, under the ground, under cars and bikes and feet, walking in taxis, swerving and cursing at bikes and pedestrians, crossing the wrong way on the wrong side as the straight rain falls into puddles over gutters, while water trickles down from daylight into darkness into tunnels where it finds us with our moments on the metros, still moving. Poets and procrastinators, readers and seekers in trousers or tiaras, non-conformers and non-believers, gender X and gender equals, we've reached the end of another episode of Eats the Storms, the poetry podcast that has been available to you on Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts, iTunes, basically anywhere that you like to call your preferred podcast platform, we are usually there. My name is Damon B. Donnelly. I've been your host and producer, and I am so eternally grateful to the poets who have come to share their voices and visions on the show. And today I have been so lucky and fortunate to have had Lisa Molina, Damien Postorino, Sue Finch, and Barney Ashton Bullock. Now, if you don't know by now, we have a website, and that website is called eatsthestorms.com. And over there, there is a podcast section. It's called Listen to the Podcast. And if you click on that, it will bring you to individual blog posts, and each post relates to an episode. This was episode 10, season 6. There on that post, you will find photos, bios, social media handles, and website links in order to find, follow, and be fantastic fans to all my guests on the show today. Now, while you're over at Eat the Storms, you can also check out details, as I've mentioned a couple of times today, of The Storms, our printed journal of poetry, prose and visual arts. I started this last year with an idea of returning poetry to the page when lockdown ended, and along with poetry, I decided to mix in prose and visual arts. Why? Well, Because when I think about creativity, it comes in all forms. And for me, one day I want to paint, one day I want to write a novel, and the next I want to write poetry. So therefore, when I was thinking about what kind of journal I wanted, it had to include everything. We are all artists trying to express ourselves, whether it was with a pen, a paintbrush, a lens, or a scissors and glue, and a collection of magazine images waiting to be collaged together. The inaugural issue of The Storms came out last August, and now issue 2 arrives on the 18th of February, with pre-sales kicking off at the beginning of February, so keep an eye out for that. We had a fantastic, phenomenal response to issue 1, and I hope that we continue that positive reception with this new issue. For the first issue, I was joined by Gaynor Kane as sub-editor, and for this issue 2, I had the joy of being joined by fellow Dublin poet Eileen Dupuer. What a time it is at the moment for journals, because right here in Ireland, we have fantastic selection of new journals that have just come out, including Howl, which arrived last year. Earlier this month, we had The Force-Faced Liar. And of course, last year, we also had the first journal anthology from our friends Flight of the Dragonfly when they published The Flight's Journal. And just this Christmas, of course, I had the enormous honour of being sub-editor over at Black Bow Poetry for their third instalment of their Christmas and Winter anthology. Go journals, anthologies, those who create them and those who fill them. Now, just before we go, I would like to take a moment and remember one of the contributors from our inaugural issue who very graciously joined us at the casino in Dublin last year when we had the launch of issue 1 of The Storms. Kevin Higgins passed away earlier this month, the author of 6 collections of poetry published by Salmon Poetry, including his most recent Static, Sex and Death in Merlin Park, and The Ghost in the Lobby. Along with his wife, Susan Miller DeMars, they provided poets with a platform to read and perform for the past 20 years at the helm of Over the Edge. A flame has dimmed in the literary community, not just here in Ireland, but all around the world. The flame has dimmed, but the light will never truly go out. Okay, my lovely listeners, that's it for me for this week. I will be back with you again next week. The show goes out from 5 p.m. GMT, Greenwich Mean Time, on your preferred podcast platform. But of course, we are a podcast, so please feel free to tune in whenever you choose. Until next time, look after yourselves, be kind to each other, and every now and then, reach out and hold the light. And of course, it goes without saying that until next time, I hope that you all stay bloody poetic!
Oh, thank you.